Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the sometimes it's better by yourself head.
Two Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobbies, share our thoughts with you, and even play some games. And spoiler alert, we got something to discuss today.
What? Just kidding, I know what we're discussing.
Also, we do that every episode.
Today's episode is about solo RPGs.
Solo RPGs?
Solo RPGs. Did you know you can play RPGs
solo?
With just yourself?
Just by yourself? Yes.
Fact.
That's why we wrote episode stuff about it. But I guess, you know, to be fair in this intro, we're both pretty new to the idea. And I guess...
Let's lay some signposts down, right? Talk about what the heck is solo role-playing, first off. Then we're going to go into some styles that we've seen as we've entered into this realm. And then our initial thoughts on what makes a good solo RPG. And, like, you know, maybe in a year's time or whatever, we can revisit solo RPGs after we've done them a couple times or something.
I think this is a pretty, like, you know, introductory. This episode is going to be a fairly introductory text to the whole idea because we are pretty new to it. But yeah, if we stick around, well, yeah, if the show sticks around and we do any more solo RPGing, we'll probably end up coming back and talking about solo RPGs some more, because we have some ideas of, like, well, what could be cool. But yeah, let's start with this first thing. What is a solo RPG? Which sounds stupid to, like, pose as a question because it's in the name, but let's talk about it a little bit more, because otherwise there wouldn't be a show.
So, role-playing games traditionally are played with a game master of sorts and a group of players who make characters. But did you know that you can simulate all of that experience with just yourself and, like, a guide or a book?
And that's so that's essentially what it is.
Dumb GM who's like, well, I have to take a week to plan the session, and then another week to plan the next session.
How dare
and then
he?
Another week to or her or them. Instead, you can just be like, you know what? I got an hour. Crack open this book and then rip an RPG. And then, like, you know what? I have another hour. Crack open the book. Rip an RPG.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, this bullet point isn't really like, what is a solo RPG? You play an RPG by yourself. It's kind of like, you know, how's it work and why? So that's kind of the main differentiating thing. No game master. You play by yourself, and through whatever system you're using, random generation, or you're just, like, actively game mastering for yourself, and whether you play a single character or a party of characters, you're just doing the experience without someone else being on the other side of it.
And so, like, at its core, it's just essentially a random generation or table of random generation events or something like that, or cards or some form of the player. You, in this case, engage with the mechanic, and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you're going to reveal something and, you know, then respond to it in character, in the role-playing of your character. Some sort of procedural system is going to feed you the encounters or the events or the locations or whatever. And then you're going to engage with that as if you were playing a role-playing game, but, you know, you don't have to schedule with other people, or it's just a thing you play by yourself. And could be cool, could be fun. I don't know. So yeah, no game master. And I've seen some stuff on just like YouTube videos about other role playing games. It seems like going game masterless is a little bit of a trend in design right now. I don't really know very many games that do that, but I've seen a couple things where like you play it with a party, so it's different than a solo RPG, but getting rid of the game master and having some sort of like deck of cards or random events table that the party then responds to, but you still role play, you know, as a party, like a group. I personally don't see much appeal in that. Like, if you've got the group together, then, you know, someone should be the game master probably, but, you know, if there's a game designed for that, then I guess it seems like a thing that there is some interest in. And it comes back to this idea that what is going to run the game instead of a game master is some sort of system of procedural generation, and then you respond to it, you know, and then the outcomes of your response in role playing lead you to rolling for the next thing to happen or drawing a card for the next thing to happen. So solo role playing games.
When you mention games that are designed not to have a GM, are you talking about like Gloomhaven, or are you talking about like,
no, but
rule book?
Yeah,
like a traditional RPG, but I
forget what it was. I clicked on it because the art on the like in the pages of the game kind of looked cool, and I watched a little video about it. It was like a Star Wars type RPG where you played as, you know, a crew of rebels, but it specifically said it's game masterless. So you're supposed to get together as a party, but then like procedural tables present the adventure to your party. I think that's a little bit of a strange idea. And it's not really what we're talking about today, but it exists.
And just, we mentioned it, so I have to explain it.
Yeah.
Gloomhaven, for those who don't know, is a combo board game, role-playing game, where a group of adventurers pick characters and go through a dungeon. And, like, the dungeon's got some randomness to it, and, like, you know, the enemies have specific moves that they do. So, like, it's like role-playing through a dungeon, and then, like, after dungeons, you can go back to town, and, like, there's some written-up stuff about, you know, town encounters and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a type of game masterless role-playing game.
I would say, yeah, that kind of fits into the, that's that sort of thing. It, you could consider it, especially if you got into role-playing. If you didn't treat Gloomhaven like, you know, a purely tactical board game, and you, you know, kind of role-played as your character a little bit.
I mean, the problem with Gloomhaven is it takes 3 hours to set up.
Yeah.
So then you only get to play for 45 minutes.
Right.
Unless you have some magic dedicated space because you live in a mansion or something. Anyways.
Yeah. But yeah, so I suppose you could consider that certainly a GM-less role-playing game, and you could also play Gloomhaven solo. There might be like a solo mode for it, or there's also nothing stopping you from controlling four characters.
Right. I think if I owned Gloomhaven, that's the way I would engage with it.
I think that's the only way, if I owned a copy of the game, I would actually make any progress in a Gloomhaven campaign.
And I guess
I'd have to set it up and leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, and then come back to it in the evenings and be like, okay, now I'm going to finish this dungeon. Okay, next dungeon. Instead of breaking it down, setting it up, and waiting for the the scheduling to align.
Yeah,
to
if we, like, weren't playing a traditional campaign on the side, you know, I could see that we could all be into it, you know, like, instead of Saturday morning ripping an Afterlife, it's Saturday morning ripping a Gloomhaven.
Yeah, I could see it. And it could start to feel very much like a role-playing game, but just without a game master. And I think, you know, that leads back into solo RPGs well enough for me to force this segue. that it's just a different way to experience role-playing games. And it has some advantages, some disadvantages, I would say. Me personally preferring to be a game master, usually. The lack of a game master is an interesting kind of problem. But there is some unique role-playing experiences that can come from something like that, GM-less and specifically solo, which is what we're talking about today. So, with that in mind, kind of knowing what vaguely a solo RPG is, let's talk about some different styles of how to do a solo RPG.
Styles of soloing. Well, there's fast and slow, lotion or no... Wait, what are we talking about again? Just kidding. I know what we're talking about.
I knew.
So one of the styles that we've come across are like a journaling style. So it's more of like a creative writing exercise mm-hmm. than it is like a board game.
Right. But there's still some manner of like... prompt generation, some, you know, roll on dice tables or like flip cards or something, and then you the way you are playing the game, quote unquote, is you're like journaling in character or maybe in like, you know, third person, whatever, the events that you're role playing through, as if, you know, it's like a travel log or a diary of an adventurer, you know, the adventurer's journal going through this stuff type of thing. So the first one I ever heard about was called Thousand Year Vampire, and it's a booklet where you flip through it, and in the booklet it has all these prompts and like things that happen to you, and so you create a vampire character who starts at like some point in history, and, you know, you journal as this, you know, undead character who has to like do things to survive through the world until like you do it until you die. You see how far you get, how long you live, and then what things, and the booklet gives you the prompts of like, you know, peasants found your castle or whatever, and how did you do it. And I think you could plug more tactical dice systems into it too if you wanted like stats and attributes, but I don't think the game itself comes with that. It's purely a journaling thing, but still definitely a role-playing experience.
Less of a game, more an experience. So like with this style, it's mainly like writing a story and writing these events. Like the events come from a table or a, you know, randomization kind of tree, and then like you get to decide with minimum rolling like how stuff goes. Which is an interesting idea. You know, very kind of like what we do with like RPG Lite, where it's like very loose. Oh, are you going to succeed or not? Okay, what does success look like in this scenario?
Like, here's a simple dice roll. Stuff. You succeeded or you failed. Now describe what that looks like. Or you succeeded with a complication or something like that.
Right. There's no like, oh, I got to hit this guy like 10 times, and then if I do max damage, it's only 8 times. And, you know, none of that. You know, right. Stat crunchy stuff in this style.
Now, you certainly could play a different... you could play a more like crunchy, a more robust game system. You could play D&D 5e just by yourself and be like, well, I know my character and I know what they're going to do, and then use the random encounter tables and stuff to generate you know, the fights that you have. And then you could look in the monster manual and go off the description of the monsters, of their behavior, and play out those fights or play out social interactions, and then, you know, still like at the end of it, journal what happened for your session. If you play for like an hour, journal what happened. Like, what game system you use is not necessarily precluding you from playing it as a journaling system, but there's systems that are designed specifically to get you to journal them.
I think it would be extremely annoying and hard to journal a like tactical battle. Like, if, like, the game system is about you crawling through a dungeon.
Yeah.
You know, fighting every monster and, like, making sure you have supplies and, you know, your health points, and then you gotta rest at the, like, appropriate intervals and set up, you know, camp so you don't get ambushed and stuff like that. I would find that, journaling that, extremely tiring, and then not really playing a game, more of just, like, writing a novel with extra work.
It'd be like you're transcribing the, like, if you played, well, Baldur's Gate 3, but, like, the older computer RPGs where there's that, like, I forget what it's called. Maybe it's just called the log. But where it, like, it'll have the tagged character hits other character for X damage, and then it keeps scrolling up as, like, the mm-hmm. fight progresses, and, you know.
I don't feel like that's, like, the
X journaling used, yeah, to, you know, to
thing. That's just the game log.
To transcribe that log, I guess I agree. It'd be, you know.
I'm not saying you can't do it. And, like, if that's really what, like, gets you all hot and excited, you know, transcribing a, like, hit-for-hit battle log.
Mm-hmm. What I was imagining is you wouldn't transcribe the battle log. You would, like, play the encounter, and then you would journal, like, you know, traveling through the hills, I fought a hill giant, and then I camped for the night type of thing. And you could still do that, but then the journaling would be kind of taking a backseat to you
tactically
playing right. the RPG, which is the next thing we're going to talk about is, like, tactical battle solo RPGs. But, yeah, I would agree. Like, you could plug the journaling in, and we'll talk about how you can combine.
Because, I mean, like, you know, you can also write a journal for your character in a traditional RPG.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, like, that is, I wouldn't call that a type of solo RPG. I would call that being a sicko.
Well, yeah, that's like a supplementary activity.
Because you want more role-playing and, like, well, what am I going to do for the next 5 nights in a row?
It's
journal as my character.
Another video that I watched was about Shadow Dark, which is a new sort of, like, 5e alternative that is pretty popular right now. And it has some old-school stuff in the beginning of the, like, player instruction, and one of the things is that in addition to your, like, your race and your class, the party is supposed to be divided up into a couple of roles. Like, someone's job is supposed to be the chronicler. Someone's job is supposed to be the mapper. Someone's job is supposed to be the, like, the paymaster, the treasurer, and keep track of the thing. And that's a thing that, like, when you do character creation and you do your session zero and you're getting ready for your campaign, you're supposed to kind of assign that stuff out in this old school dungeon crawling mm-hmm. style of play. It's important, you know, if a lot of the game is going to be spent in dungeons, that, like, someone is on top of mapping the dungeon. Someone is on top of, like, keeping mm-hmm. track of who you've met and what they said.
Having, like, those roles is extremely cool to me. And the only, like, realistic way I, like, think I could experience that is by solo RPG. Because as much as, like, I think it would be awesome to, like, have a session zero where you decide who gets to be treasurer, who has to be chronicler.
Yeah.
Like, you know, fucking players are going to come in and be like, well, I don't want to do that.
Or you've given me an extra assignment. Or,
like, I wanted to be in charge of the coin so I could skim off the top or some bullshit like that.
And some players would probably be into it. I would be pretty excited. I wouldn't be that excited to be the treasurer because it's, you know, it's just simple math. But I don't think that sounds hard. Mm-hmm. But I do think that a lot of players, especially players who play, you know, in the more sort of modern tradition and didn't grow up with the old school traditions, and are used to a much more, like, narrative focused thing, than the idea of really specific supplementary assignments to what their character also does during the game, I could see some resistance to that.
Yeah, and also, like, maybe it's that we have just been too soft.
That's true. We could, like, have been asking for this the whole time.
But, like, so rarely do, like, the players come with the, like, attitude of, I am on your team for whatever reason, and, like, somewhere in my backstory, it's like, it has put me on this team, so, like, I'm gonna be a good team player. So often it's like, well, why the fuck should I trust you? And, like, I'm gonna, like, you know, fight about it forever until, like, well, until forever, because no matter how many times, like, you save each other's ass in, like, combat in the game, there's always, like, a mistrust and a, like, you're trying to fuck me or, you know, something like that.
Money especially kind of creates that. Mm-hmm. And maybe having the role of the treasurer, and this is something that, you know, you would do yourself if it was a solo game.
Yeah.
But in a traditional, like, party thing, maybe having the role of the treasurer would eliminate that to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Just be like, nope, I'm doing it. I'm doing it because the game says I'm supposed to. Mm-hmm. And so...
I have all the coins.
Yeah.
Oh, do you need... You need 5 coins for a beer? I don't know, man.
Because the...
Is beer on the list of things we need right now?
The apportioning of, like, pay from a job or a quest or whatever, that always comes up as, like, a kind of thing. And everyone has, I think, to a certain degree, the right attitude that, like, at first you should try and haggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or maybe at the time of payment, you could be like, hey, yeah, it was more dangerous than we thought. You know, can I roll to convince him that we deserve a little bit more money for this? I think in general that's fine, but as soon as you know, someone on the party is like, well, we should set some of this aside for something else, like the, you know, the spaceship one that we're doing, before you guys came up with a crew charter that spelled out,
mm-hmm,
some like specific stuff about the apportionment of credits from jobs, there's like, well, I only get that much, but, like, what if I did more than you? That sort, mm-hmm, of thing. But once it's set in stone, once it's ruled, or, you know, once it's rulified, gamified somehow, mm-hmm, it does kind of smooth it over, because they're like, oh, no, I'm abiding by this. So, you know, maybe if we had pushed it more from the beginning, it wouldn't actually be problematic.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea.
Interesting idea to assign... kind of meta roles, mm-hmm, to players and their characters. Like, yeah, chronicler, cartographer, treasurer.
Yeah.
Asshole.
Butthole. Anyway, we got a little sidetracked, but we were talking about journaling as the style. And, you know, we were talking about some other sort of journaling things. In a traditional... Mm-hmm. Party, GM-run party RPG, having someone who keeps a journal is a kind of, like, supplementary thing, and it might not be necessary, but there, mm-hmm, are some game types where doing that is the entire point. I think it's pretty cool because I enjoy the writing. Moving on to another one, the tactical battling thing. We talked about Gloomhaven a little bit. This is a kind that I'm less interested in, but there's a lot of different examples of this. We talked about Gloomhaven, which is a grid-based dungeon that you kind of discover as you go and consult the book for, like, the room layout and location of enemies and stuff. There's the old Warhammer Quest games, which are... they're billed as a board game, and like a dungeon crawling board game where you, like, flip dungeon tiles as you move through it, and then, you know, the character that you're playing, you fight the monsters, and the monsters have predetermined, like, behaviors. They will always move so far, and then they will make this attack against you, that sort of thing. You'd call it a board game, but I would say all it takes to make it a role-playing game is just, like, clicking that switch in your head to be like, I'm role-playing as my character in this situation.
Yeah, I would call them less board games than roguelike games.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is heavily dependent on mechanics, and the idea is you go in to the dungeon as a general term,
mm-hmm,
again and again and again, grind out better stats, better gear, more money to buy that stuff,
yeah,
in a very simple town, mm-hmm, setup. But, like, the meat and potatoes of this style of game is the...
is the tactical combat.
Flipping over a monster card and finding out that, like, oh, it gets two free attacks when it's flipped over. Mm-hmm. Shit. Ouch. That hurt me. Or, like...
now I've experienced this setback, so mm-hmm. with my tool set, how am I going to overcome it?
Yeah.
And almost, I mean, like a puzzle, kind of.
Yeah.
You could consider it to a degree. But a puzzle with, like, an element of randomness with the dice, and, you know, with the loot and experience that you get out of it, the ability to advance and progress your character to handle harder stuff. But still, you know, a combat puzzle, a tactical puzzle. There are three orcs here, and one of them has a bow over here, so, like, how am I going to, with my, you know, with my hit points and the amount of damage that I can dish out and the amount that I can move per round, how am I going to solve this combat puzzle?
Yeah. These ones, and this is a little nugget for future episodes, these tactical battlers, they are kind of more like a... they have a win condition. Like, you can win these games.
Yeah.
You can solve the puzzle. You can math out the math. And, like, the point is to do all the dungeons or, you know, defeat all the major bosses or something like that. Which is not really the point of, like, the journaling. The journaling is not to win. It's to make a good story.
It's to see where it goes, yeah. Right? And to, you know... to document it as it unfolds. I think there's cool things about this idea, the tactical battling type of solo RPG, but the main kind of thing that I think about when, you know, the times I've kind of experimented with this idea and the stuff that I've seen about it online or, like, YouTube videos, is that they are all things where, like, there's some other sort of hobby element to it, especially...
like minis.
Yeah, like with the Warhammer Quest, the minis are a huge part of it. Or, you know, maybe it's a board game that comes with the miniatures, like Gloomhaven, and if you like that stuff, then painting those minis is also, like, a huge element of even owning the game.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of ancillary hobby aspect is a huge part of it, separate from the actual playing the game. And the other thing that I think a lot is that the way it's been gamified, I always kind of wonder, well, like, shouldn't this just be like a turn-based video game then? Because mm-hmm. it would cost a lot less, and it would have no setup and prep time, unless that's the part that you really like, that, like, that outside of it, outside of gameplay hobby part, you know, kind of why isn't it just a video game? Diablo is, you know, especially like the first original Diablo is this,
mm-hmm.
you know, you role play kind of as a character, but the main
you
role play
in the
doing,
way that you have stats, right. And you can choose how to improve them,
mm-hmm.
right?
And, like, what weapons you want to carry, but yeah. like your class kind of aims you into specific weapons and play styles. And what you're engaging with more than you're engaging with the role-playing is you're engaging with the tactical game mechanics. And so that's kind of the thing that I think about when I think about the tactical battle type of solo RPGs. Especially, you know, if it's like, oh, it's this grid, and then you flip a card or turn a page in the book, and it's, okay, these monsters here. Well, this is just like a little puzzle,
mm-hmm.
and it could easily be a video game, but we're using analog inputs to do the random generation, and wouldn't it kind of be cooler if it was a video game? And I don't often think that in the, like, pen and paper space. A lot of times I think the pen and paper thing is better than any video game could be. But if all it is tactical combat, then it seems like video game is maybe a better delivery method. I don't know.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. For me, something about the... it's different when you, like, physically hold it or you have to physically read it. And, like, yes, it could be a video game.
Sure.
But, like... I mean, sometimes the video game is like, well, you have to, like, sit down in front of the TV, and, like, you know, I'm not saying all these tactical battlers are portable, because Gloomhaven is extremely not portable. But, like, if you just had a little booklet and a deck of cards, you could play that, you know, on the plane. And I guess you could bring a Switch on the plane, too, and, you know, shit, I don't know. You know, different strokes, that's different true. Folks.
There is a, you know, there is a really cool thing, if you like that sort of thing, which I do, to a physical, you know, it's almost like a magic that you're doing. If it's like a booklet that, you know, tells you how to play and how to interact with it. So you're opening it and reading this kind of like mysterious thing and engaging with it. And that the combination of you engaging with it with your mind and the, you know, the stuff that's written on the page, that in your imagination, it creates the space. And there's something cool about that.
Mm-hmm.
Something different than a video game.
Right, yeah, because, like, the video game is, like, it shows you what it looks like. And also, something about, I guess, video game, like, roguelikes and, you know, tactical video games and stuff like that, it's, like, sometimes they move so goddamn fast. It's more of, like, you know, your skill with the controller than it is with, like, your brain power. And, you know, obviously, with the explosion of roguelike games, indie games, you know, they started to experiment with, like, the slower-paced ones, like Blueprints, mm-hmm. for example. If you're not familiar with that one, it's you're exploring a mansion and there's all these puzzles. But, like, Enter the Gungeon.
Yeah.
Like, that's just moving your fingers right. on the
That
on
is
the
about your hand-eye coordination. Like, you see a bullet here and you press the dodge button and you aim your gun and you're pulling the trigger and... That's about
like your muscle memory and dexterity,
right?
You know.
And how you physically interact with the controls of it. But then, you know, there's something like Darkest Dungeon is a turn-based, and all you do is click. And Darkest Dungeon could easily be transcribed into like a board game, and I believe it is a board game, but it had some problems. I don't know. There was something with, like, it was a Kickstarter board game, and then it never shipped, or they wanted a bunch more money. It cost more than they thought to produce, and so a lot of people never got their copies because they didn't want to pay more than they'd already
paid
for.
Did you never get your copy?
No, because the one that came with minis was, like, $350, and then they wanted more money? Yay. The one that came with cardboard stands, I don't know how much that one costs, but... I imagine it's a fairly faithful recreation of the mechanics from the video game because they are so pen and paper that it could easily be set up and run on a tabletop. And with just like with the random encounter generation that is like hidden in the code, if you just took that out and transcribed that into like a D20 table or something, I don't know how the board game actually works, but
I'd imagine it uses a variety of dice for different things. Mm-hmm. You know, like, probably, like, I don't know, like, the crit chance could be a D20, and, like, damage is, like, you know, depending on the weapon, 2D6s or whatever.
Right.
Anyways, let's move on from tactical battling.
Yeah, that's another type.
To the traveling, exploration... resource management type.
Yeah.
So, like, we're talking Oregon Trail.
Basically. But on a, you know, on your desktop, pen and paper, on the tabletop. Sorry. Desktop means computer. So you got a map, right? And you got, like, some things to keep track of. Like, you know, how many people are in your caravan or how many crew are on your spaceship, whatever. And you're traveling across the map. And as you travel... things happen, and then using the tools that you have, you roleplay handling those situations, and then some sort of, you know, dice roll mechanic to resolve them. This is a pretty cool idea to me, because, you know, it's kind of like a video game, but it's just like a couple sheets of paper in front of you, and you're, you know, marking it with a pencil and rolling dice, but you're still, you know, you're still like moving something around a board, kind of just less tactically than. And I guess you don't even have to have that. Like, you could play this sort of game without a map. You could just be like, how many days is it going to take to get to, you know, your homestead in Oregon? And what random encounter is going to happen to you? And do you have the resources to handle it, type of thing?
I mean, I think if... I think a map is kind of... You don't necessarily need it. But, like, if you don't have a map, then... It What's really, the point?
It abstracts the idea of travel so much. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, all you're doing is just resolving a dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
without the physical representation of travel and progress.
Yeah, I would be extremely upset if I purchased a game built on like a traveling exploration cell, and then I didn't get a map.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe it's a blank map and like I have to draw it in. That's pretty cool.
But if you draw it in based on prompts, then yeah. Like you're playing the game by doing that. And that's cool. And there's a lot of I can think of a lot of like examples from media. What was that? What was the Of the Dead movie where they had that cool, like, zombie armored truck thing?
Was it Day of the Dead or the next one? I forgot how those went. Because
yeah.
Day of the Dead,
Dawn
I think
of the Dead
was,
or Land of the Dead, maybe?
Well, so it was like Day of the Dead was the first one, then Dawn of the Dead, then Land of the Dead. I might be confusing those. Anyways, but it was like, I think the second iteration, because the first one, they're in the
mall.
Yeah. And then the second one is they get the armor up the bus and drive to California or something.
I think that's the point. And then I think it's Land of the Dead where they have the cool sci-fi, like, zombie-killing truck.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been living out of that, like, safe zone with the dead all outside, but they have to go out to, like, get stuff or... something is the deal with it. I don't remember. Worth revisiting those movies, maybe. But that idea is a pretty cool one for this sort of... like, that you have some sort of, like, armored vehicle or caravan, mm-hmm. and you're going through, you know, maybe a hex map or something, and, like, here's where you start. You need to get to here, because, you know, you gotta bring them the ingredients to the cure or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And each hex you travel through, you know, different encounters, different terrain, and you're also managing, like, your fuel and the crew on board. And, you know, we blew a tire, so we can't move here. We gotta send a crew out to, like, scavenge what we need to get the truck back running, type of thing. And, you know, mechanics for just a variety of different encounters as you try and... make mm-hmm. your way through something scary and dangerous in a travel game.
Yeah. I'll set this up for later, but, like, this is one of those things that's, like, I've always thought was a really cool idea, but, like, to actually execute it with a group of players and, like, a game master
uh-huh.
is always fucking hard.
Yes. Yeah. To... like, the concept of running a proper kind of traditional campaign where that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got your car, or you got your armored truck, and you got to cross the country. And every session is going to be like, what new thing stands in our way of progress?
Mm-hmm.
And which route are we going to take? That sort of thing. You're right. Tough to... So, yeah, let's hang that on a peg for a thing we're going to talk about later. Anything else about, like, the travel sort of?
I mean, like, you can do it several different ways. It can be more tactical, it could be more journaling, lots of variety, I guess, in like the traveling, because I think it would be a great travel log journal exercise,
yeah.
Or, you know, style, I guess. We're talking about styles. But it could also be extremely tactical, as in, like, yes, to move one hex, you have to have this amount of fuel and, like, all this other, you know, mechanical stuff.
It could also be, like, if you're in a hex and, like, oh, it's a roadblock. Okay, well, we need to dismount crew to clear the roadblock. And while they're doing that zombies attack, it could be, like, that becomes a tactical battle, mm-hmm. where then you switch over to another piece of paper that has... a square grid mm-hmm. with your truck in the middle, and it says, like, X amount of zombies come from here. Place your characters in such a way that you win this encounter, and you have to win this encounter in order to then return to the overland hex travel. Yeah. So then that's combining these different styles into a single game.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple different styles into one single game. Could do it. Could be interesting. Could be a lot.
And I mean, I'm sure there's like one products style out there already that are, you know, combos.
Things like that,
the previous things we've talked about, and kind of have a mishmash. And...
But yeah. So, yeah. Anything else to say about different styles of solo RPG?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, so the last big bullet point, like, so that's what solo RPGs are or can be. We spent a good chunk of time talking about that. So, why then would you want to?
Like, what makes them goods? What are the advantages?
Yeah. What is the... Why would you pick a solo RPG over, you know, the traditional role-playing experience? The first and most obvious one is the scheduling thing. That... is a bugaboo that has nothing to do with the game system you're playing or, you know, how good a game master you are, how good your players are when they're actually there. It's just, you know, especially as adults, it's hard to schedule. It requires commitment, it requires interest in continuing, and sometimes that is the biggest obstacle to doing anything. A solo RPG solves that because it's just whenever you feel like playing and you got the time... You set it up and you rip one. And there's something pretty cool about that, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, it's easier when it's on your schedule, right? You don't have to make any compromises or concessions and be like, okay, well, like, you know, I have... this, and I want to go to, like, a sports event or, like, a concert or whatever, and, like, oh, but that's the only time the rest of the gang can do it. So then, like, okay, well, you guys can do it without me or something like that.
So we're either not playing or we're playing without one of our friends who, you know, was supposed to be there. And especially, you know, if you cut a session off at an awkward moment and then you come back and someone who was there isn't there, that sucks.
Right? Not a problem, solo RPGs.
Yeah. Solves it. Solved. Scheduling solved. Fucking don't play with other people.
Put it on the board.
Yeah. It sounds like a joke, and I said it as a joke just there, but it really is. Like, that is kind of a huge advantage of this style of thing. If this is a thing that you really like doing, there is ways that you can do it by yourself. And it might seem a little bit weird and awkward at first to, you know, be... imagining just with yourself, by yourself, as somebody else, and then also kind of doing the game master role, not game mastering yourself, but consulting these tables and then doing what they tell you to just by yourself in a vacuum. But you can do it. You can role play like that, and you can do it at any time, and you can do whatever you want, and that's really cool.
And because it's just you, you can use whatever system you like. You don't actually have to buy one of these specifically solo products, right? It just takes a little forethought and, like, setting up. So, like, you know, you had mentioned earlier that you can just, like, play 5e with, like, a journaling style.
I think that's a good example to go back to for this because, like, you could use random encounter tables and you could just read the monster descriptions and play both sides of it, character and game master.
Yeah.
Any RPG could theoretically be played solo in that fashion. there's and also
exactly how the, how you do that is completely up to you.
Yeah.
So like, if you don't want to fuck with like the hard, like the leveling system and experience points in D&D, and just kind of like loosely, like, you know what, I'm gonna fight three encounters and then I'm gonna level and stuff like that, and like, you know, oh, I broke the balance for myself. You can easily fix the balance for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, if it's too hard or too easy, you know, there's no, you don't have to consider bringing another player in who's like gonna start at level one or anything like that.
Right.
The balance is not an issue because you're playing it.
You can also get like supplementary products that are designed to like turn a traditional RPG into a solo thing. Oracle type products that have additional randomness that like are designed to fulfill the role of game master. And so you use this book full of random tables to generate the game for you and then just play it solo. You could do that with basically any role-playing game. The resources exist, even if it's just being like, I'm going to do it in my brain. I'm going to do it myself and just kind of set it up in a certain way where it works by myself. But the main reason we put this chapter in the outline is we wanted to talk about the potentiality for solo RPGs to not just be that, not just be like, well, any old game you could play solo, right?
Yeah.
What are the solo experiences that you could do that are cool because they are solo role-playing?
Right, so let's take that idea off the peg that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
The, like, cross-country track or exploration or whatever you want to call it. Hard to do with a game master and a group of players, right? Like, what happens when a player isn't there, can't make it? The entertainment value of, like, the group, and they're like, oh, I'm kind of bored now, and like, oh, we've been doing the same thing over and over again, or
right. You know,
stuff like that. So I think, like, a solo RPG...
Things that aren't very fun for a group to deal with, which is, like, inventory management or, like, resource management. When you spend, you know, too long doing that with the party at the table, and instead of actually playing the game, some people get bored of that.
Yeah.
When do I get to hit something with my sword? We're dealing with, like, you know, our castle incomes and, you know, how much resource we have to complete this project or whatever. But the solo experience allows you, like, if that's the thing that you want to do, then you get to do that.
Right, and it's not at the expense of anybody else, right, because you're the one who's playing. Like, it's just you, so, like, yeah, you can spend 2 hours fiddling with your castle income.
Right.
And it will still be fun.
Because you chose to do that, and you are engaging with a system that is designed for that.
So, like, yeah, those kind of ideas. Like, another one is, like, you know, a spaceship crew, and, like, you can be the captain and, like, have a functioning crew that never, like, says, you know what, I would rather, you know, do this thing. And then you have to have a discussion about, like, well, I'm the captain, so I have what I say goes and stuff like that.
That's also a thing. Like, it's tricky to impose some sort of, like, rank hierarchy on the player characters in an adventuring party. It's tough to be like, oh, well, I'm the sergeant or I'm the captain of the ship. And even though, you know, we're role-playing, you have to listen to me. If I give you an order, the chain of command says that you do what I say. And so you're taking a little bit of agency away from the characters in the sense that the only way they retain their agency and not just, like, do the action that someone else told them to do is they disobey and do something shitty. And then we're not progressing. But you could play as the captain of a starship, and you're role-playing as the captain in a way, like you said, where when you give orders, the crew just does the orders. The crew does the orders, the ship becomes kind of an extension of your character. You role-play as the captain, commanding the crew, operating the ship.
Yeah. And that's not to say that you won't have that, like, crew strife. Like, that could definitely be, like, a setback or, like, a random car that's like, oh.
Yeah. A random encounter could be.
Disobedience or whatever.
Insubordination on the on engineering deck.
Mm-hmm.
Penalty to this for the next couple rounds, and then you have to do some, like, role-playing to resolve it type of thing.
And so, yeah, like, big groups, you know, so, like, a ship captain is one example, but, like, also armies. So, like, you know, a big group of people, kind of like RTS style.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of hard to do with three or four players. Easy to do when it's just one.
Yeah. One general who commands the army, and then, you know, the booklet gives you the terrain and the enemy forces, and then you command your forces in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be as tactical or as narrative, with as many or as little dice rolls as you want. As you know, you get to customize that experience to the thing that you think is going to be fun, because it is solo.
Something that is another, like, that is hard to do with a group of players is, like, have specialized and exact, like, loadouts or something like that for, like, example, monster hunters. So, like, if you're going after, like, a dragon, you probably want a specific kind of setup and loadout.
Mm-hmm.
And player characters get attached to their character, and they're like, my character can do everything, when really it's like, well, maybe you should play a different style to fight this monster.
If you were, you know, role-playing as, like, the leader of a crew of monster hunters, and so you have, like, you have three guys who, what they do is they have a ballista,
mm-hmm.
and they can, like, shoot a net or shoot, you know, big spears, but they have to set up somewhere, and so they're limited to that role.
Right, so, like, if you're players in a traditional group, like, they might just have to sit there for the entire session.
Yeah, like,
the dragon never flies
by. I sit over here manning the ballista because this is where we placed me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I only got to shoot once, and it wasn't that fun because that's all I got to do. But if you have a handful of other units in your little monster hunting crew, you can place them over to the side, and no one, they're not going to get mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to be like, oh, well, we wasted this session. We didn't get to do anything fun. You just, you know, would tactically engage with the monster hunt.
Like,
using them like chess pieces when they're useful.
So, like, if you remember, I'm pretty sure we put it on the board a long time ago, but the slice of, or the pie graph of, like, game master and player time, and then the player time is split up between individual players and stuff like that. Extreme specialization kind of changes the pie slices for the player, right? Like, if you're only if you're special and, like, specialized about doing one thing, like, if that thing is not in play, you get way less play time, and, like, kind of like, you know, the splitting the party of, like, okay, well, I'm gonna set up the ballista over here,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, oh, dragon never comes that way. So, like, that person who's manning the ballista doesn't really, it just has to kind of sit there, and which is fine, because, like, you know, eventually it will come around, and as a game master, you know, you can kind of help facilitate making sure everybody gets a little playtime at least. But solo RPGing, you're playing everything, so, like, it doesn't matter if the ballista sits there and does nothing.
Yeah.
Because you're all over here doing all the stuff anyways.
Right. You're just gonna, you're gonna have them, and every time it's their turn, you're gonna be like, you know, Overwatch action. Prepare an action. If the dragon goes here, shoot.
Yeah.
Type of thing. And so you're still using it, you're still engaging with it,
mm-hmm.
but nobody's gonna be like, oh, I didn't get to. Or, you know, if, like, a character is, like, a really specialized sniper or the driver. And
driver's, like, a great example.
You know, like, oh, we're not using the car. Mm-hmm. We're not using the ship in this.
Mm-hmm.
One, but if a character has, you know, become pigeonholed into that in a situation, in a session where their speciality isn't used,
mm-hmm.
well, then they don't get to use it, and they might feel like, well, this was a waste of time for me to show up to this today. And
And of course, you know, that is worst case scenario, because like the answer to that in a traditional role playing group is, so you might just be bad at like going on the mission instead of driving the car, but you can still
But you should role play that, and that could still be really fun. Not necessarily, you know, to be competent in everything, but to still try and help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe you get to a point where, like, oh, my expertise could come in useful in this part. Like, hey, look, we could break into this garage and steal this truck or something. And now my driving skills do have something.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have had that if you just stayed back type of, you know.
But not a problem in solo RPGs, because you're playing all the characters.
Right. Or you're playing one character and it's the exact character that you wanted to play going on the quest that you wanted to go on, type of thing. So, yeah, the whole kind of point of this section of the outline is that solo RPGs are a cool thing that, you know, you could do with basically any role-playing game, but there is something cooler than that, and that is the specifically solo experience, the experience that wouldn't really work in the traditional way, and you know, why you would choose a solo RPG over a traditional party with a game master RPG. The specific experiences that you can do solo that would be hard or not fun to do with your traditional group.
All right, so I think we'll leave you with that. If you have like a system that you picked up because it looked cool, but like you haven't been able to sell it to your group, and like you're like, oh, we're never going to get to play this because like the group doesn't like to engage with this sort of mechanic.
Yeah, or they don't want to switch. Like, you've been playing D&D for a long time, and even though there's a million other games out there, the party just wants to keep playing D&D.
Consider doing a little hacks on that thing and making it solo and like
doing
a journal adventure or something.
Yeah, turn it into, take this system, take the setting, take whichever part of it you got excited about and turn it into a solo experience and give it a rip, give it a try and see if it scratches your itch that way. Because it seems like We've lightly dipped our toes into this at this point, but it seems like there's a lot of really cool potential.
I mean, so like, right, we talked, you know what a solo RPG is now that, you know, we've gone through that. We talked about some styles like the journaling, the prompt writing, or the writing based on prompts. Like the tactical battlers, kind of more board gamey, roguelike type of solos, the like hex crawl traveling style, and then just kind of like the advantages of why it might be something for you to try.
So, hope you enjoyed that. Think that'll about do it for this episode of solo RPG discussion. If you like this stuff and enjoy our show in general, head on over to 2hgm.com, where we got a few things going on. One first thing you'll see is a link to the ad for Afterlife, available on DriveThruRPG, our original post-apocalyptic fantasy role-playing system and setting, all in one book. Buy the physical book, get the PDF for free, share the PDF with your players, keep the book for yourself. We also have a little one-page RPG Lite downloady thing, which we use a lot. Real simple, really fun to run, real easy. And we also have a link to our Patreon.
Yes, where you can sign up. If you join us on Patreon as one of our patrons, you will get access to our Discord, where we interact with our fans, do live broadcasts of our recordings like the Halloween special, and you get to kind of participate.
Might even get a chance to be on the show, because we just like talking about this stuff with people who want to talk about it. Certainly, if you got an interesting idea, bring it up in the Discord. There's a good chance to get an episode made out of it if anyone's got anything to say in the Discord chat. We just like talking about this stuff, and that's what we keep doing. So, yeah, if you enjoy it, consider throwing us a couple bucks and getting in on that. Think that'll probably about do it for this. Thank you to the Burning Saviors. Flubbed it. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pontillo's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And I think we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.